Off the Ball Breakfast.
How's your golf? And this is my favourite answer. How's your golf? My golf is where it should be. It's proportional to the amount of practice I'm putting in, which isn't a lot.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Welcome along. It is Thursday's Off the Ball. We've got a hell of a show ahead. Anna Capeless, former Ireland back row, is going to be with us. Rugby World Cup this weekend. Ireland already qualified for the quarterfinals. So are the reigning champions, New Zealand. The intrigue is, who plays? Will Aoife Wafer get some time in the pitch? Will Ireland go strong? Will they potentially look towards a quarterfinal? We'll chat to Anna a little bit later on this hour. After 8 o'clock, Neil O'Callaghan, the Dublin hurling manager, is going to be with us for the full hour to reflect on his first year in charge. Also, Na Fianna winning their first All-Ireland club hurling title this season. And then the football show, Louise Quinn is going to be with us. Women's Super League is intriguing this year. You've got the European champions in Arsenal. You've Chelsea going for 7 in a row. And you've got the London City Lionesses buying every player under the sun just ahead of the transfer window closing for the Women's Super League, and we will get a Hungarian perspective on Ireland versus Hungary as well. So all that to come between now and 10. I'm delighted to say that Cameron Hill is here with me. How are you, Cameron?
Good evening, Will.
And live from the K Club, day one of the Irish Open Golf, we have Nathan Murphy. How are you, Nathan?
Good afternoon, Will.
Good afternoon. I'd call it good evening,
evening
at this stage.
Evening. I've been in this media tent for going on 12 hours at this stage, so I've sort of lost track of time and, well, probably reason by now.
Well, that's the thing. I've covered a couple of Irish Opens for here, and both times I found it was a delicate balance between trying to be in the media centre to see as much golf as you possibly can. That temptation, which no doubt was there for you this morning, to get out for the, let's say, the headline Irish players who were teeing off very early, and also trying to get to the interview area. In some ways, we probably saw more golf than you did today.
I saw a fair degree of golf this morning. As you say, I got here good and early to follow, the three big superstars of Irish golf were all out at around 8 a.m. this morning. Patrick Harrington was out first, followed by a group that included Shane Lowry and Brooks Koepka. And then Rory McIlroy was straight up after them. And despite the early start, there were massive crowds in early at the K Club. And I think most of them who came early will feel pretty satisfied with what they saw, because Shane Lowry has put himself in a very decent position after day one. Rory McIlroy is still thereabouts, despite a disappointing end to his opening round. And they got to see themselves the green jacket in the flesh, because at around about lunchtime, amidst some very, very heavy showers, Rory McIlroy went down to the spectator village and he went up on stage in the full rig out. He had the green jacket, he had the Augusta tie, he had the white shirt, he looked resplendent. And he went on stage and the ovation was quite incredible. There was thousands of people. There can't have been many out on course at that stage, because everybody, despite the torrential downpours, wanted to see Rory McIlroy. And I have to say, it was quite a special moment for McIlroy. He was a little bit emotional, Will, up on stage. He started talking about Harry Diamond, and as he did when we spoke to him earlier in the week, just that idea of meeting each other as seven-year-old kids on a green at Hollywood Golf Club and going on to conquer the world together. And he got a bit choked up while talking about that and had to sort of just take a moment to reset himself. And it's brilliant that emotion and excitement is still there for McIlroy, because obviously we've all probably dove a little bit too deep into what it's meant for him over the last while. So I think anyone who's here today, despite the weather, which was inclement, to put it mildly, will have had themselves a jolly good afternoon.
Yeah, look, we got a nice peek behind the curtain with that walk down the ninth that you guys from Golf Weekly had with Rory during the week as well. And I got the impression, walk away from that, the Irish Open still means a tremendous amount to him. Obviously, this week is going to be emotional. It reminds him of how well he played back in 16. But he, in the same sentence, was talking about how much pride he had in bringing the green jacket to Portrush as he had bringing it to the K Club.
Yeah, and how cool is that? Like, that's the bit that when you're probably thinking about winning a Masters, and he's probably been so wrapped up in the career Grand Slam and the constant questioning for sort of 7-8 months in the build-up to Augusta about, is this the year he's going to finally do it, and why hasn't he done it, that maybe you don't think about actually all of the great things that are going to happen afterwards. And getting to go to Portrush and wear it on the Tuesday night, and here today in front of thousands of supporters who absolutely adore him and who probably gave the best sporting day of the year to all of these golf fans with what he did in that Sunday night and the drama of it. Yeah, I think he really appreciates being back. And I mentioned it on the show last night. I think there was certainly a period where maybe it was taking a while for Rory and for Shane in particular to come to terms with the crowds and the love that was there for them. But I think over the last couple of years, they just seemed that bit more relaxed, particularly McIlroy, where, you know, I think we've seen in the last few months, maybe there's a bit of a frustration at times with some of the American media and a bit of a weight on his shoulders with some of the line of questioning that he's facing there, that he just feels he's amongst his own here and he's amongst his own support. And they do really, really want him to succeed and to hit the shots and to do magical things. And listen, there were times today when he was doing magical things. Unfortunately, at the end, it kind of just petered out a bit.
For this year, particularly, is this a nice sweet spot to host the tournament as well? Because we've had May, we've had July, we've had around about this time. There were arguments about trying to put it close to the Open previously, trying to play it early on in the year previous to that. Is this a nice spot because the guys are getting to come back together? There's a lot of the European team who are playing this week at the K-Club as well. You've got Brooks Koepka out of season who can come across from Live to play here too. Does this feel like it's maybe the right spot in the calendar, particularly in a Ryder Cup year?
Yeah, look, this debate has been going on for a long time. As you said, they've tried lots of different things. And, you know, I still think most would feel the ultimate sweet spot would be either the week before the Open, which isn't a runner because of the Scottish Open being there and a long-term contract been in place, or maybe the week before that, and you end up trying to sell it as a link swing and get some of the best Americans to come over and get all of the European Ryder Cup team over as well. They've always chosen this one, funnily enough, because I think the weather tends to be better. And, you know, go back a couple of years at the K Club and the weather was absolutely sensational. Not the case this week. And in fact, because of the weather delays and they had to stop play for about 45 minutes earlier on, they may struggle to get the first round finished. My disappointment with this year, Will, is that the Ryder Cup team was picked on Monday. If they just held off another week and maybe even pushed back the automatic qualification period another couple of weeks, that this was the last event, I think you'd see a much stronger field. And actually, the only Ryder Cup players here are Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry. All of the team is getting together next week at Wentworth. But we're very fortunate that, you know, McIlroy is the biggest star in golf. I know Scottie Scheffler is the biggest and most successful player in golf right now, but McIlroy is still the one with all the star power. And you just love if they could go and somehow find a way of twisting the arm of, well, the top Europeans and a few of the top Americans to come over. But listen, I think it's in a good place for McIlroy, which is arguably the main thing, that you find out when he was going to turn up and when he's going to play, and that's when you schedule it for and you try and build a tournament around that. And listen, Brooks Koepka being here is a really big boost because, you know, he does just walk around with the strut of a man who's won five majors and who, you know, played some really good golf as well today and looks like he's going to be around for the weekend and maybe even able to get himself into the mix.
Yeah, you can get that chat with the lads of Brooks Koepka as well ahead of the tournament, which is still available if you want to have a listen. So looking at the leaderboard here, Cameron, there's a lot of familiar faces. Bernd Wiesberger, a playoff winner previously at the Irish Open. Thjorbjørn Olesen up towards the top of the leaderboard as well. Give us a standing of where we are now, despite the rain outside.
Well, it's Alex Maguire who's leading the Irish Challenge on day one of the Irish Open. He's moved up to 4 under par. With around 5 holes to play in his opening round. So Shane Lowry just behind him on 3 under after that opening round 69 today. Rory McIlroy on 1 under alongside Brooks Koepka. Padraig Harrington is 2 over. He was one of the early starters today. While in the last few minutes, Seamus Power has come off the course. He's finished for level par today. It's Nacho Elvira, the clubhouse leader. His brother Manuel joined him briefly at the top of the leaderboard, but he's dropped back to second today, so he's the man to catch on 6 under.
All right, Nathan, we'll hear from Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy in a second who you caught up with after their rounds, but I saw Lowry finishing out really well earlier on. McIlroy will be disappointed. He gave a couple of shots back to the course on the 7th and 8th. He started on the back 9, so he'll probably be a little bit disappointed with his finish, but Lowry finished out very nicely earlier.
Yeah, just before we get to Shane Lowry, let's, while we're here on Thursday evening, and look at the top Irishman on that leaderboard, who is Alex Maguire. And the hopes of a nation are going to rest on men from Bettystown and Laytown over the next few nights, because we've got Alex Maguire in the mix. And we got Evan Ferguson leading the line on Saturday night. I think the two families know each other quite well. There's obviously a little bit of an age gap between Alex and Evan, 4 or 5 years. But as far as I'm aware, the Philip Reid from the Irish Times just informed me that I think the two families do know each other quite well. So listen, what a weekend that would be if Evan Ferguson scores the winner on Saturday night and Alex Maguire wins this tournament. You know, funnily enough, Alex Maguire played here a couple of years ago as an amateur. He's playing on the Challenge Tour and has sort of been playing a lot on the Challenge Tour. He was expecting to have this weekend off. He was one of the last players into the field. The only reason he ended up getting in was that Connor Purcell, who's our sort of sole European tour rep at the moment, he managed to get in automatically on his category, didn't need an invite, and that was then passed on to Alex Maguire. And, you know, talking to Shane Lowry about 2009 and him winning as an amateur, you know, we were both sort of saying, God, it was insane. And you would sound a bit mad to suggest this week that an amateur could win. And you'd sort of put Alex Maguire, even though he's now as a pro, but he's so still fresh to the pro ranks, if he was to win, it would be just one of the most ridiculous weeks that we have ever seen in professional golf or at an Irish Open. So listen, he started well. He's one of those, he was in the very last group out. It's going to be very, very tight to see whether Alex Maguire can get finished. He's just played, what's he played? 10, 11, 12, 13. So he's just on the 14th hole at the moment and we're at 7:15. So he may end up having to come back in the morning, but he has 5 birdies, 1 bogey. He's on 4 under par and he's just what? A shot off the lead, or 2 shots off the lead of Alvira and Torbjörn also. But yeah, Shane Lowry was out very early this morning. Had a very enjoyable morning following him around. He dropped the shot early, started on the 10th, Shane Lowry, and they probably had the best of the conditions. It just started lashing rain moments after Lowry ended up finishing on what was his 18th, but the 9th hole. But he did a big birdie in front of the grandstands on 18, moves on to his back 9, has 3 birdies there, including one again in front of a massive gallery on the 9th. And, you know, he know more than anyone knows how important it is for the tournament, never mind himself, to get in the mix early in the week. Let's hear what he had to say.
To be honest, I'm surprised the scoring is not lower. It's pretty soft out there, but then there's a lot of back pins, hard to get there, get to them, and you know, the greens are very soft, so it is tricky in places. But I played pretty good, average enough start and nice finish. So yeah, I'm very upbeat about my round. I think, you know, coming in here today, I just wanted to play nice, like, and I felt even though I was 1 over 2 8, I was playing nice, I was driving the ball well, and I'm happy with my day's work.
You've just walked off the 9th with a roar echoing around the course, and you did the same thing on the 18th. You picked the nice holes for the big shots.
Yeah, it was nice. You know, I did say to Darren, I hold a lovely putt on the 8th, stay 2 under, and I hit that lovely shot into 9 and said to Darren, I hold this, it's a really nice day. So it was nice to hold that, and yeah, I'm pretty happy.
Everyone's talking about how well you're striking it off the tee. What's the key?
It's a new driver, so...
What did you change that?
It's just a new... different tricks on driver that, you know, I've used a lot of drivers this year. I've chopped and changed a lot of, you know, models of tricks on. And
is that normal for you?
But I haven't exactly driven it bad. It's just I felt that driver was going pretty long as well. I'm pretty happy with how that went. It's obviously only the first day using it, so, but the first day is the most important day, really, or one of the most important days with it, so I'm pretty happy with that.
Perfect timing there, you hear rain bashing down behind them just after that when he got into the clubhouse. If you want to send us a WhatsApp, 087-9180-180. The news round is with thanks to UPMC, Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't bend, rotate or move like they used to, you can choose us to help get yourself back in action. So you caught up with Rory as well, Nathan.
Yeah, so Rory ended up being put on the clock, as we're going to hear in a moment. So the 2 players he played with had a really, really bad day, including Tristan Lawrence, who won last week on the European Tour, but blows hot and cold and was bottom of the leaderboard after the early starters. And there was obviously massive crowds as well. And McIlroy was going along very nicely. He got to 3 under par on a couple of occasions. And then I was watching him on the 7th hole, which you'll have heard Paul Carrington say yesterday, he feels is the best par 4 in all of golf. It's an incredibly tough hole. McIlroy hit a sensational drive straight down the middle, probably left himself 125 yards, but both of his playing partners went in the water. He ended up having a really long wait before hitting the approach, ended up went over to green slightly, sort of duffed the chip, dropped the shot there. Similar thing ended up happening then on the par 3 8th, and suddenly he's back on 1 under par. Not out of it by a long shot, but definitely when I spoke to him afterwards, Will, very frustrated with the fact that he found himself being put on the clock.
I think we have that piece of audio. Let's see. Are we Rory McIlroy ready to go?
No, that's how frustrated he was.
That is one of those. He was so frustrated it got lost in the movement into the computer. So if we get Rory McIlroy back in a second, we'll talk about that. Not to jump around too much, Cameron, while the guys get Rory out there. But I did not expect the news today of Daniel Levy has left Tottenham Hotspur.
No, he says he's proud to have turned Tottenham into a, quote, global heavyweight, Will, after stepping down as chairman following almost 25 years in the role. The club's assured fans there'll be no changes to the ownership or shareholder structure. Peter Charrington will step into the newly created position of non-executive chairman. Of course, Levy was at the helm when Tottenham ended their 17-year wait for silverware this summer when they won the Europa League.
I'm kind of surprised by this, Nathan, to be honest. Like, for a long time, people have been saying Levy out, change in ownership, this is what Tottenham need to go to the next level. But every time that Daniel Levy talked about, you know, fan reaction, he always seemed really defiant that he was saying, look, I am keeping this club. Look at the stadium I'm literally standing in right now that I've built. I never got the impression he was going to actually walk away.
No, you wonder how much he has been shielding the ownership of the club in recent years from criticism and taking that on his own shoulders. There's no doubt that, look, Tottenham, in a purely business sense, may be well run, but you look at their, you know, wage to revenue turnover, it's far less than any other side, which again, you could hold up in one way as an example of a very well run business. But at what stage are you simply not spending enough money to be successful and to keep up with every other team in the Premier League? So it's going to be really fascinating to see, is Levy's departure the start of a change in tack at Tottenham and a more aggressive Tottenham in the transfer market and the club willing to spend more money? They obviously have arguably the best ground in the Premier League right now. And is that going to start being reflected on the pitch? They've got themselves a very good manager in place for this season, but still that squad looks a little bit light because, listen, the two outstanding talents of this generation in Harry Kane and Heung-min Son have both gone. And when you look around that squad at the moment, it doesn't feel as though really there's anybody quite of that level. So this seems to have caught everybody on the hop. Nobody was quite expecting Daniel Levy to just suddenly one day walk out the door and be gone. And I suppose now the question the Tottenham fans are going to have is the successor going to be a very different personality and have a very different way of doing Tottenham's business? Or is it just going to be the ownership picking somebody who's more of the same?
I'd say a lot of other clubs are probably happy enough not to have to negotiate with Daniel Levy anymore either. The gremlins have been fed before midnight in the background. We can now hear from Rory McIlroy.
In all honesty, I felt a little rushed out there for the last 12 holes. We got put on the clock pretty early. And then we were then the first official went away. And then we were put on the clock for the last three holes to try to make time up. And it's hard because, like, you feel a bit rushed, you're playing some tough holes, and we obviously, our group has to deal with a lot more than any other group on the course, so it's understandable that we lose time. And I feel like any time I either come back to Europe or I play in some of these like 1, 2, 3 in the world type groups, we're always put on the clock for that reason. So got a little frustrated the last few holes because I feel like it always happens and they don't give, I don't think they use sort of common sense in terms of, well, of course we're going to lose ground because we're going to have to wait on crowds and wait on the two camera crews that are out there. And, there's just a lot more going on with our group than any of the other groups on the course. And sometimes I feel like they have to give us a little bit of leeway and use a bit of common sense.
Did it particularly impact, just on 7, where you're probably a hole and a half behind Shane's group and the two lads you're playing with both go in the water?
Yeah, and then obviously they're taking their time and whatever, and I was, in my mind I'm like, oh, do I just go first to try to save a bit of time here? But not really. I mean, you can, you can still wait your turn, I guess. So it wasn't really that. I guess it was more, just felt, because it's happened to me quite a lot before in these sort of big groups or when I come back to Europe and play, felt like I just let it agitate me a little bit.
Sounds to me, Nathan, like what we need here are the Irish Open officials to take care of Patrick Cantlay.
Yeah, quite possibly. It's the European Tour officials. I was actually talking to one of those officials who was involved on the back nine afterwards. And, he was explaining that it's the group you put on the clock rather than the individual players. And the two players with McIlroy, Tristan Lawrence and Christopher Rayton, were combined 14 over par. So, there was a lot of resetting, a few balls in the water, all of that. And I think McIlroy makes a very fair point that the tee times are scheduled, 10, 12 minutes apart for everybody. But McIlroy, with the crowds that are there, automatically on almost every hole, it's taken him a minute or two longer to weave his way through the thousands of people that are between the green and the tee that have their, hands out looking for a fist pump or for an autograph or something like that. That he is not the same as every other golfer in this field. And maybe it would make more sense that when you're plotting out an afternoon, you go, well, we got to give these guys an extra 5 minutes maybe than everybody else, rather than putting them on the clock. In saying all that, McIlroy is such an experienced player. You would have to assume at this stage he should be able to hack that. But sometimes, and as I say, you know, I was sort of between the two groups, and there was, you know, there was almost two holes to Shane Lowry's group in front of them at one stage. So yeah, it was a bit of a slog out there for them.
Yeah. Cameron, let's go from one person leaving Tottenham to a person going to Tottenham in Mason Melia, who's got the Ireland under-21s off to a good start.
Yeah, a winning start. Will, Mason Melia striking twice as Jim Crawford's side were 2-1 winners in their opening campaign win against Moldova. So they take on Andorra at Tala Stadium on Tuesday night, hoping to go 2 wins from 2.
All right, we're going to be tongue down and capeless about the rugby in a few minutes' time, but tell us about Pearce Stadium potentially becoming a temporary home for Galway United.
Well, you've said it there. Eamon DC Park will be undergoing drainage works, or set to anyway, in July of August of next year, so will be unavailable. So Galway GAA has reportedly agreed to allow the League of Ireland club to use the ground. It still requires further approval from Croke Park, however.
That will almost certainly just come at the weekend when that management meeting is on Saturday, so I presume it'll be up before that. You've spent a lot of time in Galway, Nathan. Pearce Stadium, a good venue for Galway United to go into?
It makes sense. I do love Eamon DC Park, and while you always want to see improvements, redevelopment, and all of that, it'll be. Listen, we don't even know fully, I guess, what the new Dexcom Stadium, the atmosphere is going to be. It looks the part. I think everyone would agree. It's always good when you see these sports working together, helping each other out. And I think in Galway, definitely Connacht Rugby and Galway United seem to have a very strong relationship. So I think their focus right now, Will, is making sure that when they make that move, they're playing Premier Division football next season.
Yeah, they don't want to get sucked into those bottom two positions. They want to finish out the season strongly. All right, we're up against the clock at the moment. Cameron, thanks a million for joining me.
Thank you.
Nathan Murphy, enjoy the rest of the time in the K-Club and your trip into town to watch the game on Saturday between Hungary and Ireland as well.
Yeah, cannot wait. Big few days ahead.
Great stuff. Cheers, lads.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
How's your golf? And this is my favourite answer. How's your golf? My golf is where it should be. It's proportional to the amount of practice I'm putting in, which isn't a lot.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.